burning brands from the campfires he'd been carried into the scrub, and the flames were taking hold in the forest. They gave the scene a hellish illumination, and men's shadows made monsters of them as they rushed about, startling each other. Someone fired a musket, and immediately there was a wild fusillade as panic-stricken sailors fired at shadows and at one another. More screams and cries as the flying musket balls took their toll amongst the scurrying figures.
"The bastards are in the forest behind us!" It was the buzzard's voice again. "This way, my brave boys!"
He was rallying them, and men came rushing up from the beach to join the defence. They ran full into the musket fire of their nervous fellows amongst the trees, and fired back at them. When Aberley reached the beach, he found longboats drawn up, abandoned by their crews, who had rushed away to answer the buzzard's call to arms.
"Where do they keep their tools?" Aberley snapped at Jiri. "There's a store over there."
Jiri led him to it at a run. The spades, axes and iron bars were stacked under an open lean-to shed. Aberley sheathed his cutlass and seized a heavy iron bar. The other three followed his example, then ran back to the beach and fell upon the boats lying there. With a few hefty blows, they knocked in their bottom timbers, leaving only one unscathed.
"Come on, waste no more time," Aberley urged,
and they threw down the tools and ran to the single undamaged boat. They thrust it out onto the lagoon and tumbled aboard, grabbing an oar each, and began to pull for the dark shape of the frigate, which was now emerging from the darkness as the flames of the burning forest lit her. While they were still only a few oar strokes off the beach, a mob of pirates poured out from the grove.
"Stop! Come back!" one shouted. "It's those black apes! They're stealing one of the boats! Don't let them get away!"
A musket banged, and a ball hummed over the heads of the men at the oars. They ducked and rowed the harder, putting all their weight into their strokes. Now all the pirates were firing, and balls kicked spray off the water close at hand or thumped into the timbers of the longboat. Some of the pirates ran to the boats at the water's edge and swarmed into them. They pushed off in pursuit, but almost immediately there were howls of dismay as the water poured in through the shattered floorboards and the boats swamped and overturned. Few could swim, and the yells of rage turned to piteous cries for help as they splashed and floundered in the dark water. At that moment, the second explosion swept through the camp. It did even more damage than the first, for in response to his bellowed orders, the buzzard's men were charging straight into the blast when it struck them.
"There's something to keep them busy for a while," Aberley grunted. "Pull for the frigate, lads, and leave the buzzard to his kinsman, the devil."
Hal had not waited for the first explosion to shatter the night before he launched the fireship. With all the men in the party helping, they dragged the Hal down the beach. Relieved of her cargo, she was a great deal lighter to handle. They piled into her the bundles of cutlasses and the chest filled with loaded pistols. They left Saba to hold her and ran back to fetch the second vessel. The women ran beside them as they dragged it down to the water's edge and scrambled on board. Big Daniel carried little Bobby and handed him to Swanchi when she was safely seated on the floorboards. Hal lifted Sukina in and placed her gently in the stern sheets. He gave her one last kiss.
"Keep out of danger until we have secured the ship. Listen to Ned. He knows what to do."
He left her and ran back to take command of the first boat. Big Daniel and the two birds, Sparrow and Finch, were with him, as were Althuda and Saba. They would need every fighting man on the deck of the frigate if they were to take her. They pushed the boat out into the channel, and as their feet lost the bottom, they began to swim and steered her for the anchored frigate. The tide was at high slack. Soon it would turn and give them its help as they ran the frigate for the deep channel between the heads.
"But first we have to make her ours," Hal told himself as he kicked out strongly, clinging to the gunwale.
A cable's length from the Golden Bough, Hal whispered,
"Avast, lads! We don't want to arrive before we're welcome."
They hung in the water as the boat drifted aimlessly in the slack of the tide. The night was quiet, so quiet that they could hear the voices of the men on the beach and the tap and clatter of the frigate's rigging as she snubbed her anchor and her bare masts rolled almost imperceptibly against the blaze of the stars.
"Maybe Aberley is run into trouble," Big Daniel muttered at last.
We might have to go aboard her without any diversion.
Wait, Hal replied. Abberley will never let us down.
They hung in the water, their nerves stretched to breaking point. Then came the sound of a soft splash behind them, and Hal turned his head. The shape of the second boat crept towards them from the island.
Ned is overeager, Big Daniel said. He's only following my orders. But he must not get ahead of us. How can we stop him?
I will swim across to speak to him, Hal answered, and let go his hold on the gunwale. He struck out towards the other boat in a silent breaststroke that did not break the surface. Close alongside, he trod water and called softly,
Ned! Aye, Captain,
Ned answered as softly.
There's some delay. Wait here and do not get ahead of us. Wait until you hear the first explosion. Then take her in and latch onto the frigate's anchor cable.
Aye, Captain,
Ned replied. And looking up at the black hull, Hal saw a head peering down at him over the side. The starlight glowed on Sukina's honey-gold skin, and he knew he must not speak to her again or swim closer, lest his concern for her affect his judgment, lest his love for her quench the fighting fire in his blood. He turned and swam back towards the other boat. As he reached its side and lifted his hand to grip the gunwale, the quiet night was shattered by thunder, and the echoes that burst against the hills swept over the lagoon. From the dark grove, flames shot up into the night sky and for a brief moment lit the scene like dawn. In that illumination, Hal saw every sheet and spar of the frigate's rigging. But there was no sign of an anchor watch or any other human presence aboard her.
All together now, lads, Hal said.
And they struck out again with new heart. It took them only minutes to close the gap, but in that time the night was transformed. They could hear the shouting and musket fire from the beach, and the flames of the burning forest danced and glimmered on the surface around them. Hal was afraid that they might be lit brightly enough to be spotted by a vigilant sentry on the frigate's deck. With relief, they swam the awkward craft into the shadow cast by the frigate's tall hull. He glanced back and saw Ned Tyler bringing the other boat close behind them. As Hal watched, they reached the frigate's drooping anchor line, and he saw Sukina stand up in the bows and take hold of the cable. He felt a lift of relief. His orders to Ned were to keep the women safely out of the way until they had control of the frigate's deck. He saw with satisfaction that a skiff was moored alongside the Golden Bough, a rope ladder dangling into her from the deck above. Even more fortunately, it was empty, and no heads showed above the frigate's rail. However, he could hear a babble of voices above. The crew must be lining the frigate's far rail, facing the beach, staring across in alarm and consternation at the flames, watching the running figures and the flashes of musket fire in bewilderment. They pushed the fireship the last few feet and bumped softly against the side of the empty skiff. Immediately, Hal hauled himself out of the water over her side, leaving the others to secure her, and swarmed up the rope ladder to the deck. As he had hoped, the skeleton crew of the frigate were all watching the disturbance. But he was dismayed at their numbers. There must be 50 of them at least. However, they were absorbed in what was happening ashore, and as Hal gathered himself to climb out onto the deck, there was another mighty detonation from out of the forest.
"By God, would you not look at that?" one of Sam Bowles' pirates shouted. "There's a bloody great battle going on there. Our shipmates are in trouble. They need our help." "Oh, I owe no favours to any of them. They'll get no help from me." "Seamus is right. Let the buzzard fight his own battles."
Hal swung himself onto the deck, and with half a dozen quick steps, he had reached the shelter of the break in the forecastle. He crouched there and surveyed the deck. Jiri had told Abberley they were holding the frigate's loyal crew in the main hold, but the hatch was in full view of Sam Bowles' men at the far rail. He glanced back and saw Big Daniel's head appear at the entry port. He could not delay. He jumped up, ran out onto the main hatch combing, and dropped on his knees behind it. There was a mallet lying beside the hatch, but he dared not use it to hammer out the wedges. The pirates would hear him and be upon him in an instant. He knocked softly on the timbers with the hilt of his cutlass, and spoke in a quiet voice. Ahoy there! Golden bow! Do you hear me?"
A muffled voice from beneath the hatch cover answered immediately in a lilting Celtic accent.
"We hear you. Who are you?" "An honest Englishman come to set you free. Will you fight with us against the buzzard?" "God love you, honest Englishman. We beg you for a taste of his mongrel blood."
Hal glanced round. Big Daniel had brought up a bundle of cutlasses, and both Wally Finch and Stan Sparrow carried others. Arthuda had the chest of loaded pistols. He lowered it to the deck and opened the lid. At first glance, the weapons within seemed dry and ready to fire.
"We have weapons for you," Hal whispered to the man under the hatch. "Lend a hand to throw back the hatch when I knock out the wedges. Then come out fighting like terriers, but call your ship's name so that we will know you and you us."
He nodded to Daniel and hefted the heavy mallet. Big Daniel seized the lip of the hatch and put all his weight under it. Hal swung the mallet, and with a resounding crack, the first wedge flew across the deck. He leapt across the hatch, and with another two more full-blooded swings of the mallet sent the remaining wedges clattering to the deck. With Big Daniel straining above and the trapped crew of the Golden Bow heaving underneath, the combing cover flew back with a crash, and the prisoners came boiling out like angry wasps. At the sudden uproar behind them, Sam Bowles' men turned and gaped. It took them a long moment to realise that they had been boarded and that their prisoners were free. But by that time Hal and Daniel faced them across the firelit deck, cutlass in hand. Behind them, Arthuda was striking sparks from flint and steel as he hurried to light the slow match on the locks of the pistols, and Wally and Stan were tossing cutlasses to the liberated seamen as they stormed out of the hold. With a wild shout, a pack of pirates, led by Sam Bowles, charged across the deck. They were 20 against 2, and their first rush drove Daniel and Hal back, steel ringing and rasping against steel as they gave ground slowly. But the pair held them long enough for the seamen of the Golden Bow to dash into the fight. Within minutes the deck was thronged with struggling men, and they were so mingled that only their shouted war cries identified foe from new-made friend. "Cochrane of Cumbrae!" Sam Bowles howled, and Hal's men roared back, "Sir Hal and the Golden Bow!" The frigate's freed sailors were mad for vengeance, not merely for their own imprisonment, but for the massacre of their officers and the drowning of their wounded mates. Hal and his men had 1,000 better reasons for their rage, and they had waited infinitely longer to pay off this score. Sam Bowles' crew were cornered animals. They knew they could expect no help from their fellows on the shore, nor would they receive mercy or quarter from the Avengers who confronted them. The two sides were almost evenly matched in numbers, but perhaps the crew of the frigate had been weakened by their long confinement in the dark and airless hold. In the forefront of the fight, Hal became aware that it was swinging against them. His men were being forced to yield more of the deck and retreat towards the bows. From the corner of his eye, he saw Saba break and run, throwing aside his sword and scurrying for the hatch to hide below decks. Hal hated him for it. Takes but one coward to start a rout. But Saba never reached the hatch. A tall, black-bearded pirate sent a thrust through the small of his back that came out through his belly button. Another hour on the practice field might have saved him, Hal thought fleetingly, then concentrated all his mind and strength on the four men who crowded forward, yammering like hyenas around their bleeding prey to engage him. Hal killed one with a thrust under his raised arm into his heart, and disarmed another with a neat slash across his wrist that severed his straining sinews. The sword dropped from the man's fingers, and he ran screaming across the deck and threw himself bleeding overboard. Hal's other two attackers drew back in fear, and in the respite he looked around in the melee for Sam Bowles. He saw him in the back of the horde, keeping carefully out of the worst of it, screaming orders and threats at his men, his ferrety features twisted with malice. "Sam Bowles!" Hal shouted at him. "I have you in my eye!" Over the heads of the men between them, Sam looked across at him, and there was sudden terror in his pale, close-set eyes. "I am coming for you now!" Hal roared and bounded forward. But three men were in his way. In the seconds it took him to beat them aside and clear a path for himself, Sam had darted away and hidden himself in the throng. Now the pirates clamoured about Hal like jackals around a lion. For a moment he fought side by side with Daniel and saw with amazement that the big man was wounded in a dozen places. Then he felt the hilt of the cutlass sticky in his hand, as though he had scooped honey from a jar with his fingers. He realised that it was not honey, but his own blood. He too was wounded. But in the heat of it all he felt no pain and fought on. "Beware, Sir Hal!" Big Daniel roared close beside him in the confusion. "The stern!" Hal jumped back, disengaging from the fight, and looked back. Daniel's warning had come just in time to save him. Sam Bowles was at the rail of the stern, overlooking the lower deck. There was a heavy bronze murderer in the slot of the rail, and Sam had a lighted match in his hand as he swiveled and aimed the small hand cannon. He had picked out Hal from the press of fighting men, and the murderer was aimed at him. Sam touched the match to the pan of the cannon. In the instant before it fired, Hal leapt forward, seized the pirate in front of him around his waist, and lifted him off his feet. The man yelled with surprise as Hal held him like a shield, just as the murderer fired and a gale of lead shot swept the deck. Hal felt the body of the man in his arms jump as half a dozen heavy pellets smashed into him. He was dead even before Hal dropped into the deck. But the shot had done fearful slaughter amongst the crew of the Golden Bough, who were grouped close around where Hal stood. Three were down, and kicking in their own blood, while another two or three had been struck and were struggling to stay on their feet. The pirates saw that this sudden onslaught had tipped the balance in their favour and surged forward in a pack, Sam urging them on with excited cries. Like a cracked dam, Hal's men started to give way. They were seconds from total rout, when from over the rail, behind the raging rabble of pirates, rose a great black tattooed face. Abberley let out a bellow that froze them all where they stood, and as he sprang over the rail he was followed closely by three other huge shapes, each with cutlass in hand. They had killed five men before the pirates had gathered themselves to face this fresh onslaught. Those around Hal were given new heart. They rallied to Hal's hoarse shouts, and with Big Daniel leading them, rushed back into the fight. Caught between Abberley with his savages and the rejuvenated seamen, the pirates wailed with despair and fled. Those unable to swim scuttled down the hatchways into the bowels of the frigate, while the others rushed to the rail and jumped overboard. The fight was over, and the frigate was theirs. "Where's Sam Bowles?" Hal shouted across at Daniel. "I saw him run below." Hal hesitated a moment, fighting the temptation to rush after him and have his revenge. Then, with an effort, he thrust it aside and turned to his duty. Ah, there will be time for him later. He strode to the captain's place on the quarter-deck and surveyed his ship. Some of his men were firing their pistols over the side at the men splashing and swimming towards the beach. "I've asked that nonsense," he shouted at them. "Stand by to get the ship under way. The Buzzard will be upon us at any moment now." Even the strangers he had released from the hold rushed to obey his command, for they recognised the tone of authority. Then Hal dropped his voice. "Abberley and Master Daniel, get the women on board as quickly as you can." While they ran to the entry port, he turned his full attention to the management of the frigate. The topmost men were already halfway up the shrouds, and another gang was manning the capstan to weigh the anchor. "No time for that," Hal told them. "Take an axe to the anchor cable and cut us free." He heard the clunk of the axe into the timbers at the bows and felt the ship pay off and swing to the ebb. He glanced towards the entry port and saw Abberley lift Tsukina onto the deck. Big Daniel had little Bobby weeping on his chest and Swanky on his other arm. The mainsail blossomed out high above Hal's head, flapped lazily and filled with the gentle night breeze. Hal turned to the helm and felt another great lift of his heart as he saw that Ned Tyler was already at the whipstaff. "Full and by, Mr. Tyler," he said. "Full and by it is, Captain. Steer for the main channel." "Aye, Captain." Ned could not suppress his grin. and Hal grinned back at him. "Will this ship do you, Mr. Tyler?"
"It will do me well enough," Ned said, and his eyes sparkled.
Hal seized the speaking trumpet from its peg and pointed to the sky as he called the order for the topsails to be set above the courses. He felt the ship start under his feet and begin to fly.
"Oh, sweet," he whispered. "She is a bird, and the wind is her lover."
He strode across to where Sukina was already kneeling beside one of the wounded seamen. "I told you to leave those bags ashore, did I not?"
"Yes, my lord," she smiled sweetly up at him. "But I knew that you were jesting."
Then her expression changed to dismay.
"You are hurt."
She sprang to her feet.
"Let me attend to your injuries."
"I am scratched, not hurt. This man needs your skills more than I do." Hal turned from her, strode to the rail, and looked across to the beach. The fire had taken fierce hold on the forest, and now the scene was lit like the dawn. He could clearly make out the features of the horde of men at the waterside. They were dancing with rage and frustration, for they had realized at last that the frigate was being cut out under their noses. Hal picked out the giant figure of Cumbrae in the front of the press of men. He was waving his claymore, and his face was so swollen with rage that it seemed it might burst open like an overripe tomato. Hal laughed at him, and the buzzard's fury was magnified 100-fold. His voice carried over the hubbub that his men were making.
"There is no ocean wide enough to hide ye, Courtney. I will find ye if it takes 50 years.
Then Hal stopped laughing as he recognized the man who stood a little higher up the beach. At first he doubted his own eyesight, but the flames lit him so clearly that there could be no mistake. In contrast to the buzzard's antics and transparent rage, Cornelius Schroeder stood, arms folded, staring across at Hal with a cold gaze that placed a sudden chill on Hal's heart. Their eyes locked, and it was as though they confronted each other upon the dueling field. The Golden Bough heeled slightly as a stronger eddy of wind over the heads caught her, and the water began to gurgle under her forefoot like a happy infant. The deck trembled, and she drew away from the beach. Hal gave all his attention to the con of the ship, lining her up for the run through the dangerous channel into the sea. It was long minutes before he could look back again towards the shore. Only two figures remained on the beach. The two men whom Hal hated most in all the world, both his implacable enemies. The buzzard had waded out waist-deep into the lagoon, as though to remain as close as he could. Schroeder still stood where Hal had last seen him. He had not moved, and his reptilian stillness was every bit as chilling as Cumbrae's wild histrionics.
"The day will come when you will have to kill both of them," said a deep voice beside him, and he glanced at Eberly. "I dream of that day,"